listening to the More Legroom podcast hosted out of CITR Radio on UBC's Point Grey campus. We are located on the traditional unceded territory of the Musqueam people, and we're honored to be able to create this podcast on this land. The point of this podcast is talking about the Vancouver ballroom scene and ballroom in general, because it has such a rich history. And in today's episode, we sit with Gailan Moulan, who is the West Coast overseer of the House of Moulan. You know, every legend has a beginning, but some people are thrust into the spotlight even when they feel like they're not ready. Gailan had a very pivotal role in the Moulans here in Vancouver, from being the first Moulan to now being the West Coast overseer. So,
hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming here. So, before we go into anything else, who is Gailan?
Well, Gailan is a ballroom persona. I first know about the ballroom scene in Vancouver, I think 2021. Yeah, I think that's when I first joined my first ball. Yeah, that's right. That sounds about right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you take us back to your first ball? What was going on? Who was there? What happened?
The first ball actually was my friend Mishku. Shout out to Mishku. He's the one who also brought me there. And then I remember the theme was like flower. And then that was my first ball. And then I remember the first time there, which is really shocked. Of course, I heard a lot of ballroom. I know a lot of slang, a lot of drag stuff or from ballroom culture. So when I first witnessed all the people walking on stage firsthand, it was very exciting. That room, I mean, I didn't know the categories or whatever, didn't know anything about it yet. But at that time, seeing so many people walking on the stage with that kind of confidence, with that kind of cuntiness, I don't know, just exudes this kind of excellence on stage. I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna be that. That's what I feel alive. More, I want more of that.
Who brought you into the House of Moulan?
Well, that's Canadian father, Kaiji Moulan. I remember that was, I think, 2022. Yeah, 2022 or 2023. I won my first posh ball. Oh, the second time. There was a second time walking posh ball, actually. My father was one of the judges, and I was walking best dressed at that time. And I had this super, super long cape as part of my element. And after I walked my category, he ran off the stage, asked for my number. And then after a couple of conversation exchanges, he asked me to join the House of Moulan. But I didn't debut until a year after, because I told him I don't want to debut if I'm the only one, because I have no siblings. So then a year later, when we have more siblings, we all debut together.
Oh, do you remember who the siblings were?
Yeah, 10th of us. Oh my God. Me, Saint, Cyrus, Simone, Leo, Miu Miu, Divine, Valentina, Ego, Vampira.
That's a big house debut. Can you take me back to that moment when you guys started to debut?
It was a very, very, very amazing debut. We rehearsed. It was an intro. I mean, we're all wearing red. We all just walk on stage with a mask to keep the suspense. Our father was on the mic, called us out one by one. We just walk on stage, take our mask off one by one, and people were like, ah! I remember all the screaming. It was really fab.
I think there's some kind of richness that comes with being a part of a house. Having that support system that other people are like, we're here for you and we're your siblings. Because I think the house dynamics in ballroom are very interesting, actually, especially given the history of where ballroom came from. That's people that were outcast from society and then decided to find family within people that had lost their own families, within people that had been kicked out of their own families. Do you find that kind of closeness to still exist in the houses today?
I think it really depends. I cannot speak for other houses, but for my house, I think in Vancouver, a West Coast chapter at least, we are very close. But I think that's because in the recruitment process, when we find new siblings to join the house, we specifically want to recruit people not just good at what they do, and you know, but that we gel with, that we can have fun, that we can kiki with. For example, in our recruitment process, we always make sure that we invite them to our practice, house practice. We invite them for dinner, we invite them for a conversation to make sure that we can have fun with, rather than just because they're good at what they do. I know that some houses, they don't necessarily have the process that we do. I know some other houses just, oh, you're good at what you do. And you walk a category that no other member in our houses walk, so you're in. They run their house like a business. They want everyone in the house walk different categories so that at the end of the year, they have more chance to win House of the Year, because everyone got 1 point, and then we are different. Butch Queen one way, for example, many people are Butch Queen one way in the house, but we don't really care because we just want siblings that we love, that we celebrate with, that supports each other.
Yeah, and I do see that come out because even at the balls, the general vibe with the Moulans is very playful. Of course, it's serious when people are walking, but when you're on the table and when you're interacting with each other, I still see that warmth and that kindness amongst each other. I think that's very admirable.
Thank you.
If you were to give the House of Mulan a personality, how would you describe her?
Oh, I think she's very silly, also shady. Because we do like to shade each other. But I think that's also boring. It's like a statement of how close we are. I think you only share with people that you feel close with, right? And most importantly, I think she is a very loving. At the beginning of House of Mulan in Vancouver, we were not sure where our footing were, and then many things happened too. But after all the things happened, the Vancouver Mulan nowadays, we are very, very loving of each other because of what happened.
When you say what happened, there was a part of Mulan history in Vancouver where a lot of people left the house very suddenly.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what happened?
It was a very dramatic and traumatic experience for many people. Well, everyone, I guess, for everyone involved. It was like mainly two dramas actually happened. The first was Simone Vesalia, back then Simone Mulan, had some conflict with our overall father, Kaji Mulan, and then there was some mistreatment there, and so she left. In solidarity, Leo Mulan also left. And second is, I would say even a bigger one, was there were some very insensitive, even racist comments were made by, back then, our princess to some of the black members in the house. And then they left. All the four, the rest of the four black members left the house. A lot of comments were made were very insensitive. And as I mentioned, racist, for example, this mention of the hair of the black member, or your hair is better straight. Even there's comment made about colonialism. I think there's one black member mentioned about, that he likes a white man. And then princess was like, you want to be colonized again? Is that what it is? Yeah, there was some crazy comment were made. And I think all these black members, of course, they came to Borum, came to a house looking for support, looking for acceptance. And then now they face this kind of comment. Of course, they were pissed, they were outraged. So they all left without telling us anything. Me and Singh and Cyrus, we didn't know what happened. We found out after, when the scene, they held like a meeting to talk about this drama, which at that time I didn't know much about what happened. At that time I was elected to attend a meeting, and it was like a lot of anger was unleashed onto me because they used that as an example of the anti-blackness that were present at that time, which was true. There's a lot of anti-blackness still happening in the ballroom scene. And so then they really wanted to use that as an opportunity to address it, because that thing was happened to us, and I was the elected member of the House of Mulan to, you know, to present at that meeting. So a lot of thing was just like direct to me. That meeting was a lot of anger, a lot of hatred, a lot of frustration. I understand the black member that were at the meeting were feeling some sort of way, not just because to that specific issue that happened in the House of Mulan, but also in general the experience as a black member in the society, or maybe in the in the ballroom scene. So they just unleash all of that, which understandable. I was in the House of Mulan and I was a member, so I would take that. But a lot of things were said, I can feel, was also, like I said, it's come from not just specific to that issue, because things are said, for example, like Simone said something like, if you don't have the skill to deal with racism, you should not. Oh, sorry, not what she said. I think she said, I focus specifically what she said, but she said in the realm of that, if you have some sort of racist tendency in you, or you cannot deal with solve racism in the scene, you should not be here. You should not enter. You don't have the skill of that. You should not enter the ballroom scene, which I have comment on that, because, you know, I don't think any of us in the ballroom scene right now that had the skill to deal with racism in general, because we are all a product of racism. Savannah also say things like, why are you here? Now that you've witnessed so much racism in your own house and people in your house left, you should not be here either. Why are you here? All of this, these two black members literally saying that I have no place here. I should not be here. Well, it's just like a lot of, whew.
Yeah, I can imagine how that must have felt for you, because the people that were in leadership were, the person that actually caused the harm, and two, the other person that lived in solidarity with someone else. So the people that were supposed to take charge were not able to. And you were thrust into that position because, as you mentioned before, you were older in terms of ballroom experience. You just felt that you didn't want to put Cyrus and Saint, who were your house siblings through that at that time, because they were also new. I think you said they were a couple of months old in
ballroom. Yeah, at the time they were a couple of months old in the ballroom scene. I didn't want to put them on that because I know that meeting is not going to be fun. I just didn't know it was that dramatic. Because again, I didn't know the specifics of why they left the house. And then only at that meeting I learned more detail of the comments were made, or like the whole process of everything of it. It was very, very traumatizing. And that, and since that meeting, I felt like we were branded as the racist house because all the black members left, obviously. It doesn't look good in any way, and especially because of the comment we made. After the meeting, I want to leave the house because, again, also comment made that they don't think I have a place here. They keep asking me why I'm still here. And on top of that, I felt like even the black member who doesn't want me to be here, there's all this anger towards me. I don't think my time in Bottom Scene will be anything fun. I came here looking for joy, looking for acceptance, looking for community, not looking to be the target of this kind of anger and frustration. So I really wanted to leave. But then my sibling at that time, Saint and Cyrus, make a comment that I felt like made me stay. They said that we didn't do anything wrong. We were not the one who say any of this stuff. Why do we have to be the one to leave? If we leave now, we are telling them that we are guilty of it.
Hmm.
It was them to make me stay.
It sounds to me like there was a kind of bond that formed between the three of you because you had to go through such a tumultuous experience together. Can you tell me more about how your relationship with them has evolved over time, especially now that you're the West Coast overseer of the House of Mulan?
Well, we're definitely trauma bonded, that's for sure. I think we become like so much closer because we were being the targets and being seen whenever we stop in a ball and at these kind of racist people that still stays in the house. Many people want us to fail. That's at least that's kind of the energy we received. But then we persist. We all had each other's back. We were the only one had each other's back. Everyone outside the house wanted us to fail. So we were definitely feeling closer and realizing that we only had each other. And slowly, when I stepped in more leadership role and become the overseer, that closeness didn't change, I would say. But I definitely, now that I'm like more of a parental figure, that closeness comes to the opposite of helping me to guide them. Because now, you know what I mean? But because it's so close with me, now that becomes someone who tell them what to do at sometimes, and they were like, yeah, it will be a slightly difficult to tell them what to do.
It's like when your friend becomes your boss.
Yeah, it's like that. So like sometimes I feel like I really have to put my foot down. Okay, you have to listen to me. That is what is not gonna happen. You just have to do it. I'm making the call. So that definitely changes a little bit the dynamic, but we are just as close, if not more, as before.
So how would you say you were able to come out of that black hole? Because that was a real crisis and it almost signaled the end of the Mulans here in Vancouver, but somehow you and your siblings were able to say, no, we're not leaving, we're staying. And can you walk me through what staying meant, what building trust again meant, what still showing up in the community meant, and still building the House of Mulan to now that you have so many members of all races and you've built this community of respect and trust? Because even when I came into the scene newly, I could still tell that, okay, it was just three people, but you guys were so close. You guys had this sense of family that I think even other bigger houses were not able to replicate. And then now, despite the house not being small anymore, you're still able to have that. How are you able to, number one, convince people that we are not the bad guys, we're not this terrible thing that happened? How are you able to build trust in yourselves and in the community again?
First, when that traumatic thing happened, first, we definitely take accountability. I understand that three of us didn't personally do any of that, but we still have accountability in the sense that we're in the same house. We were not able to prevent it to happen, for example. But when it happened, we issue apologies to the ones that matters. Our father, our Toronto chapter, and me personally apologize to people that needs to hear it. And that's one. And then second, when we decided to stay, we did talk about like what does staying means to us. First, we three decided we need to keep showing up. We can change what happened, but we can change how we show up in the space. You know, we decided to continue showing up, helping, supporting, and, you know, walk a ball if we need it, help the ball if we need it. But at the same time, keep our heads down. Just do the work, say less. And third is continue learning what anti-likeness means and how we can not do it. What it means to support Black, trans, and Latinx people in the scene, because we are obviously, as well, me and Cyrus and Saint, both Asian cis men, right? We know we are guests in the scene. Like, for example, we'll have conversation about racism, attend some workshops and seminars about racism, about anti-transness, for example. So then we equip ourselves with the kind of knowledge, learn our biases. And the fourth thing is, we realize we need to be more curious. about other people's life experience and ask questions so that we know what it is to be in other people's shoes. Then we can enter the space as a guest to other people with more compassion. I think that's how we continue showing up. And as to building House of Mulan, I don't know whether other people actually see us like this, but we know every time we walk in this ball, people see us as this racist house. We can change that, but we can change how we approach other people. So every time we want to prosper anyone, we always tell them what happened. The first time I saw you two, I told you exactly what happened to us, and that's what other people see us. But I also tell other people how we see ourselves, what we want in the house. So we just be honest, be curious. And the third thing is definitely always be transparent of what our intent. I always tell people that, of course, conflict is going to happen again. Like, what happened before? That I don't think that will happen again, but other conflict might happen. Every time we approach someone new that we want to join the house, we always tell them that conflict might happen because we are always a product. We're all a product of imperialism, racism, and everything. But all we can do is have continue to have conversation about it. And if conflict arises, we will have to find ways to resolve. And always know that our base is we want to support everyone that we can.
I do remember you telling me what happened even before I kind of knew what was going on, but not the intricacies. But I think you were actually the first to tell me exactly what happened, and I found that very interesting that you were so forthcoming with it and not just trying to ignore it or thinking, oh, she would probably find out from other people, but just taking that step to say, okay, this is what happened in the house before, this is why we're this many in the house, like this is why people left, and this is what we've done to address it. We know that these are some skeletons, but we're not hiding them away. We're showing you that we have done the work to make sure that this never happens again. And you know, we're just talking about something that when people come into ballroom, it's so glamorous and it feels like this utopia where everything is perfect and, you know, everyone is expressing themselves, everyone is, you know, free to be who they really are. And then when the honeymoon phase kind of fades, you realize that these are just regular imperfect people leading regular imperfect lives, and that veil shifts, and then you have this new respect for everyone still showing up despite being human and being imperfect. How are you able to manage that shift between coming in and having that utopia and seeing everything as rainbows and roses, and then seeing that kind of shift and especially being thrust into the middle of it? What did you learn about leadership during that time and yourself as well?
That's a great question. Thank you. As I mentioned, like the first time I walked in the ball, oh my God, it's the glamorous thing. And then again, knowing ballroom is a space built by Black, Latinx, and trans people, I definitely this kind of, you know, expectation or thought that this is a space that exists outside, exempt from society. This utopia, as you mentioned. But then soon enough, again, especially after that drama, I realized that, oh my God, ballroom is not any of that. Like, still this anti-Blackness, this transphobia, fatphobia, misogyny still exists, just like the normal society exists in ballroom, because we are in many ways still imperfect human like anyone else. So that definitely quickly burst that bubble for me, because it helped me to kind of look into myself, what I am bringing to the ballroom scene, and also helped me to look into other people's mistakes in ballroom scene with much kinder eyes. And it also helped me to navigate conversation with new ballroom members. Like, as I mentioned, like if we approach someone new that, you know, prospects that want to join the house, I always have this conversation with them that, of course, maybe you're new in the scene or new to the house or whatever. Everything is, you know, beautiful, glamorous, but conflict will arise because we are all human. We all come with different sets of baggages and biases. So now we just have to navigate when it happened, how are we going to approach this conversation? How are we going to humanize these conflicts and conversation and topics? So it definitely helped me to set expectations and lead people to approach conflict with much more grace. At least that's what I want. I expect. I do expect grace. I know expect is a strong word, but if you're no grace for anyone when they make a mistake that is very human, then I don't think you should have any relationship at all, because we all capable of making mistakes. Yeah. And we all should have that grace to anyone when mistake happens.
Did you ever imagine that coming from that time, you would be West Coast overseer one day?
No, I definitely don't. I mean, first, I never wanted a title. It's never really like a thing in my head. Oh, I want to be called certain way, because I really just want that community. And wanting community does not mean having a fab title. title or having responsibilities.
Can you walk me through what made you decide to be West Coast overseer? Because I remember you one time mentioned that Haijin wanted you to be father, and that wasn't in line with what you wanted at that time. So what changed for you to agree to take an even bigger role than father, which is West Coast overseer?
I think in bottom is interesting because I know overseer seems like bigger because now I'm in charge even more things. But like father and mother in bottom scene has specific meanings. Like overseer is not a common title. So like I don't think people still have expectation to the title overseer. But mother, father, people had expectations to that title. Like mother, father, princess and prince. These titles are very clear expectations because those are very common titles. Like you are the leader of a scene. You supposed to be someone that know your shit, that when, you know, and you care categories. But overseer is not, doesn't have that kind of expectation. That's why I prefer an overseer as a title, because I think the expectation from the outside is less. And then you're still taking the leadership role and helping your house to grow.
What does it mean to be the West Coast overseer then?
Right now, Vancouver, Calgary, and Edmonton is to help the kids, you know, to learn, you know, ballroom or categories. If they need, help them to practice their categories, help them to get ready, to guide them in their ballroom journey, in terms of learning themselves, learning the scene, learning what it means to interact with other, you know, members outside the house, or in general also sometimes with their queerness too, because a lot of them are very young. They're also early in their, not just in the ballroom journey, also in their like self-acceptance, self-discovery. So sometimes also having conversations with them about their transness, about their queerness. I mean, I'm also older in general. I think I'm the oldest in the West Coast chapter. So like also giving them a piece of my life experience. That's how I see it too. Like to be there for them if they need any advice.
And that's such a tender responsibility as well. Not just having, you know, control in a sense, but also those very quiet moments where someone is like, what does it even mean to be me? To live in this body, yeah, and to occupy space. And I think something very interesting about ballroom is I see it as an invitation to accept yourself, because you can't win if you don't accept yourself, because it will show, it will slip through the cracks. You can pretend, but you have to accept yourself and accept your body and accept who you are to step on that floor and to battle. Because for example, in terms of face, not only are you saying I have a good face, like I'm accepting that my face is good, but you're saying that I'm going to battle it out to show that I have the best face in the world.
Yeah,
exactly. You have to believe in yourself to be in ballroom, which I find so interesting. And then to be a leader on top of all that, do you find that you have to navigate a lot in terms of, you know, holding space for others, holding space for yourself, and still having goals in the scene?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely, I mean, I'm still learning too, to be honest, because I think every house is different, how they see leadership, and every person is different too, right? Like how I see it is, I, now that I have a title in the house, I definitely feel more responsibility to my kids, not in the sense of helping them to succeed in their categories, to win, to get trophies, to, you know, to get praise, but also to enjoy it. I always tell my kids, like, ballroom is supposed to be for fun. Winning is not up to you. Once you're on that runway, winning is really not up to you, because there's also politics involved. There's like, and then a lot of time, beauty is subjective. It's not like you can be the best that I think you are in this whole room, but if the judge didn't see you, it doesn't matter, right? So it really is not up to you. So have fun and feel that confidence. Now you have to do the prep work or the practice, whatever you have done to reach this moment. When you step on that spotlight, step on that one way, feel, let all the energy, let all that confidence, all the love that had received, that you have, you that you have for yourself, that all the siblings have for you, let it all show out on that one way and walk it out. Just lay it on the floor.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, just have fun. And that's, for me, that's what I want for all my kids when they're on the floor.
Being in Mulan must have really evolved for you from that first point where Kaijin spoke to you till now. What has that evolution done for you? How has that manifested?
Wow, that is... I mean, I really didn't... When Kaijin first asked me a couple years ago to join to be a Mulan, I definitely did not envision, you know, you'll be this, you know, till today. That journey, definitely nothing can prepare me for that journey for sure. But I am definitely better for it. I'm definitely grateful what it is. Even that, you know, traumatic incident that happened, I even at some sense I'm still grateful for it, because I definitely learned a lot about myself, learned a lot about what it means to be in a house, and helped me to navigate a lot, like prepare myself to deal with a lot of conflicts in and out of ballroom, and taught me a lot how to lead, because again, my house members are very diverse. Everyone are different, of different gender identity, different race, different journey in their life in terms of their queerness, in their professional career, in terms of self-acceptance of their identity. So it also helped me to be more patient, to be more curious and empathetic to everyone. And yeah, I think that definitely is the most important thing for me, because I think those are the lessons that I can always take with me.
What do you see when you look at the new generation working?
I am, I can speak of like the 007s. 007s are the ones who are not in the house. But I can see for my own kids that are new in the scene, that are new to the house. I have two new kids now, Mayumi and Rinzia. They definitely come with so much more passion, so much more excitement that I remember that I used to have. I think it speaks of the scene is growing. The scene is more accepting and more, I guess, friendly now to newer people, our house at least as well. So that's why I can feel that they're exciting to branch out, to try things, to do things, to walk, because they feel safe, they feel embraced, they feel celebrated. And I hope that will continue and even more, you know, grow even more welcoming, more exciting for new people to come, because I think that's what it should be.
Where do you hope the scene goes next?
I hope the scene can grow even more diverse, to be honest. But I think it's restricted to the population. Vancouver, definitely more like white and Asian in many ways. So I think that also reflected on the ballroom, you know, scene here. It'd be not a lot of white people, but a lot of Asian. I hope it's more diverse in terms of the more Latinx, more Black people can get into, for example, leadership roles, more trans people as well. That's one. And in fact, I think we generally also need more people, need more voices to be represented in the leadership. Right now, we are not as diverse as I wanted to be. We will get there. And I also hope we have more houses.
More competition,
because then it's more exciting. Also more options for the new kids, more space for them to be themselves, right? Because I believe every house offers different things.
So what would you say to someone that is about to walk their first ball?
Well, first do your homework. I think you need to learn about the category that you walk. Like, we need to go to classes, learn about it, know about warm history, what it's for, and then know your place, whether you're a guest or not. And then I think you need to adjust your expectations. What are you going to get from it? And also know what are you prepared to give as well. If you're only going to here to take, I don't think you should be here, because I think ballroom space is such a beautiful space because we're all here to give a little. And prepare that there's going to be drama, going to be politics, because again, it's just another society, no different than outside. And so do not come in with this utopian thought, like, you know, us do. I think that you will have a great time.
What would you say to young Gailan about to walk his first ball?
To have more confidence, I think.
Okay.
I don't think I have that confidence yet, the essence yet. Because I think a lot of time walking, in no matter what category you walk, the essence of that is that kind of confidence. You know, ballroom term is like cuntiness, of that kind of cuntiness. You have to carry that. I don't think at that time I kind of embraced that yet. But I think now I definitely now I'm more of that.
Let's zoom out a little bit and talk about the chronological history of the House of Mulan. So this year is the 11th anniversary of the House of Mulan. Yes. Wow.
House of Mulan was founded by icon Smiley Mulan, who lived in New York, and then slowly branched out. In Canada, it was first Toronto, and then Montreal, and then Vancouver, and then Edmonton, and then Calgary. And then now we're international, we're everywhere. We're in Paris, Brazil, Japan, Korea, Taiwan. Yeah, we're everywhere.
Do you talk to your international siblings? Is that
some of them? Yeah, because I am close with the Taiwan mother, Sharon Mulan. We're also in conversation with some of the Korean Mulans. Actually, right now in Vancouver, we have one of our new kids, Rancia Mulan, is from Korea. So we also have some ties to the Korean Mulans. The New York Mulan, obviously, we talk to them sometimes. A lot of New York Mulans gave us a lot of mentorship. Like when we first debuted as a chapter, a lot of our trainings and practice, New York Mulan usually call into our practice and give us guidance and train us.
How is Kaijin able to keep it? Because I know I've attended a couple of Mulan practices and he's always there. He's there on FaceTime, he's there giving tips.
Yeah, Kaijin, as right now, I think ballroom is his full life, like full-time job. He travel everywhere to walk bars and win money, and that's his income. And then I think he does side gigs here and there. He is a very tentative father. I cannot speak of his life outside ballroom, but inside ballroom as a house father, knowing what I know about other ballroom fathers, I think he's one of the most tentative, caring father there is. Like you said, every time we practice, always, if he can, always call in, give us tips, He cares about our well-being. Every time we had a question about categories, born history, whatever, he always give an answer. If he doesn't know, he always direct us to the person who knows. He knows everything that needs to be known in Bodrum. I mean, also, he's been a Bodrum scene for so many years. He is a very great Bodrum father.
And he's a ferocious protector as well.
He is a ferocious protector. Oh my God, he is. Oh my God, he will march and, anything that is not fair to his kids, he always will make sure it's heard.
In the Edmonton Bowl, I can't remember which category it was. I think there was some miscalculation.
Yeah. A commentator, misunderstood some of the votes. And then the commentator called out the other participant to win. But actually, it's our sibling who won because the commentator miscounted the vote. So, Kajou said, march in. No, that's what it is. That's not what it is. And asked the commentator to recount, and then yes.
Exactly. And even in this last awards bowl, when someone misspoke to...
Yeah, Suki Mulan, some transphobic comment were made to her, and then...
He was so ferocious on the live.
Oh, he was mad. Because to his point, it's really fair. Like, the person who make that comment is like a figure in the Bodrum already. He's a father of a house. And then he make that comment to Suki Mulan, that was her first ball. That can be very damaging to someone's confidence. A new Bodrum member, new to her transition journey as well. Like, that can be very damaging. So Kajou was really, really pissed. Yeah. Mm. And for great reasons.
Of course.
So he's very protective to his kids.
I think that also speaks to the general culture in the House of Mulan as well. Yeah. I think the Mulans are very protective of each other.
We are. I think that because, like I said, in our recruitment process, we always make sure everyone, love each other. Not maybe love's a strong word, but, at least have some sort of foundation to communicate each other, to support each other. We don't want anyone to join the house that doesn't vibe with us. I mean, I know some houses, like I said, they recruit people based on whether they're good at their category, which we do. I mean, we, of course, want our kids to be good at what they do, but our first and foremost criteria is first you have an interest in Bodrum, you want to learn, you're willing to learn, you're eager to learn. But the most important thing is definitely that you gel with us, that you can banter with us, that you can really be a family member with us. That's what I see the most important part of it.
Nice. Yeah. when you walk a ball, I think there's something you channel. For me, I try to channel this sense of calmness just so that I'm not in my head. Because you mentioned that when you walked your first ball, you kind of blacked out.
Yeah, I blacked out
as well. And I stay blacking out. But these days, I don't black out as much. But I try to instead look at it less from being nervous and more from being excited, as cliche as my sound. But I want to know specifically for you, do you have any rituals before you walk? Is there anything that you run through your mind?
Right now, before I walk, I should have, you have to change the effect. You should have practiced more. I should have find a quieter spot. Maybe 2-3 categories before my category. Maybe just walk a little bit just to get myself warm up to whatever category is. Let's say I do one way, I usually find a quiet corner, walk back and forth a little bit just to get myself, my body get into the rhythm. And then I will talk to my sibling. And then I'll go back to my table, talk to my siblings, because my siblings definitely calms me down. And then deep breath. And channel that kind of continuous in my head. It's like, I am the shit. I am the best here. I have to talk myself into that mindset.
On the other side of it, when you're a judge, is there anything that you do to prepare yourself for that? Or is that more intuitive?
I think if I'm a judge, it really depends. If there is categories that I'm not familiar with, I should do some research on it first. For example, I think dance was a category. Then I didn't know what it is. I still have to watch some clips, I Google it, what it is, what is it called for, what are the past winners in different balls, so I can familiarize myself with that category so I know how to judge. Of course, I walk Best Dress, All American, and Sex Iron, but that means outside of these three categories, I don't usually walk. I don't think I have the best knowledge of all of the other categories. But as a judge, you have to know all the categories. So I definitely have to equip myself with those knowledges, right? Otherwise, when you judge and you put a wrong vote, people can be really pissed. Mm. So I have to know every time I vote, I have legit reasons why I vote this one rather than that one.
It can be quite jarring, I think, when people come up to you and demand, why did you vote for me? Oh, especially because sometimes people are pissed.
Oh yeah, always. I mean, that's part of the thing you have to prepare. People will ask you, why do you not vote for me in this battle or whatever? That's why you have to know your shit. You have to know why. Otherwise, people are gonna call you out.
Do you have any favorite moments from previous bowls?
I mean, a lot, I would say. one of my kids in Edmonton, Trademark Mulan, he won his first best dress category. Like he's a best dress walker and he make beautiful. He make his all his stuff. I think he won many balls before and his effects always fabulous, but somehow he never won. And then the last Edmonton ball he finally won. I was so excited. I don't know why. I was just like screaming. And finally he won. It was so deserving, finally. And then the same Edmonton ball, also my kid Saint Mulan also won face. Second year in a row. I was just crying. Yeah, I don't know. I just, at the moment, I feel like, oh my God, my kids are winning. And Saint winning the second time in a row also kind of insert himself as the face girls of West Coast.
Not yes.
He also, before that, he also walked about and won in Vancouver. So he can say he is the face girl in West Coast.
2 years in a row is really impressive.
I know. So I was like really, really happy for him. Oh, also Bo winning his first All-American. I was not there, but I went and saw the clip. He worked his ass off. You practice a lot. I think seeing your kid's effort finally flourish becomes a trophy in his hands, it just it was a moment for me.
Oh, that's really beautiful. It seems like all your favorite moments are of your kids.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually what I'm focused on, to like, yeah. Oh, when they walk, when they win. Yeah.
That's lovely. Yes. Yeah, parent through and through.
Thank you
so much once again. Do you have any final words for our guests?
Thank you for listening, and thank you, Ihomen, for this lovely interview. The question is amazing, and also helped me to reflect on my journey as well, which I don't often get that time to kind of reflect on it.
You've come a long way.
Yeah, come a long way for sure, but definitely also this long way would not be possible without my sibling, of course. Not just seeing Cyrus at the early stage, but also my father, Kaijin, always there, and the new kids from Savoy to Pablo to Bo, and now Mayumi and Rensia. They all taught me a lot of things, what it means to be a family in the ballroom scene.
Are Mayumi and Rensia here to stay?
I hope so. I mean, they're the new member. Mayumi lives here, so of course. Oh. Rensia is on a 2-year kind of holiday work visa. I don't know.
Oh, that's a long time. Anything can happen in 2 years.
Yeah, you never know. So yeah, I mean, they're new kids, you know, in Vancouver chapter, but we shall wait a while. We love them very much, and I hope they love us just as much. So yeah.
How do you feel about the house getting so big, though?
I mean, slightly nervous, to be honest. Because the more people you have, the more possibility this like conflicts happen, because more people to deal with. And also, the more resources to put out to help them to succeed. We literally had this conversation a couple of days ago about, like, now that we have so many people, we should like kind of close the chapter to focus less on prospecting, but focus more on training.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of develop some sort of training plan, helping everyone succeed in their categories and win trophies and money,
yeah.
And make a statement in the scene. We're always willing to help anyone that is a 007 that's new to the scene. That will never change. If they're new, if they need help, we have space. If they need help, just reach out to us. But the focus is more internally, for sure.
That's lovely. Thank you so much once again.
Thank you.
And that's it for the More Legroom podcast.
That's it. Thank you.
This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Thank you to the program facilitators Duncan McHugh, Hina Imam, Stephanie Quetzalcoatl-Wood, Helena Crobath, Christine McKenzie, and Alex DeBoer, who all acted as guides, inspiration, and educators for this project.